the bump and run, the Bristol move.
That's aggressive, but it's that's good. Good heart racing.
Oh!
He puts him out of the groove there.
Oh, man!
Will he get the bumper? Yes, he does. Here comes Logano. Logano on the inside. A drag race. They're sideways. And it's going to be Logano getting the win.
The back end of the 18 kick out.
Yeah, he got into it right there.
Moved him out of the way.
It's almost too early to be racing that hard for the lead, wasn't it?
Never too early to be racing for the lead.
At Bristol.
At Bristol.
Man, this is one of the biggest wins of my career.
It's the bump and run,
baby!
Yeah, welcome to the Bump and Run podcast. I'm your host, Michael DeWitt, joined by my two best friends, Matt the Statman Riley and Eric Daytona Ron. Hope you guys had a great weekend. Hope you guys had yourselves a Ricky Stenhouse Jr. type of weekend, who's the big winner down in Daytona for the Daytona 500, our season opener, the Super Bowl of stock car racing. And Ricky Stenhouse Jr. so far locked himself into the playoffs with a win. Make sure you like, share, subscribe, do all that stuff. Podcast available every Monday night. Tell all your friends, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and more. And every Tuesday morning, YouTube, you can watch the video feed. Fellas, how's it going? How's your weekend? Did you enjoy the Daytona 500 festivities all weekend?
That was the best part of the weekend, was everything leading up to it, the excitement knowing that the big race was this weekend. I had planned my Dart League party to be on the day of the 500.
Yeah.
You know, get two birds stoned at once, watch the 500, have the Dart League party, everybody there, get a crowd, maybe a couple new fans that aren't into the sport, get some eyes on the TV while we're at the Dart League party. And yeah, it was a good weekend. It was a long weekend, but glad to be sitting here back with you two to discuss our first race of the season.
Hell yeah, season three, doing it for Dale, episode two. We gotta bring it today, boys. We gotta bring it because I feel like the 500 didn't. Matt, what's going on with you? How's your weekend?
It was good, man. It was good. Yeah, you know, Eric just nailed it. You know, everything leading up to the Daytona 500 was awesome. You know, the truck race on Friday night, the Xfinity race on Saturday, which I watched, you know, while attending my brother-in-law's hockey game on my phone. Still got it in. You know, and then leading right up to the Daytona 500, all the excitement, all the nerves, all like everything, you've been waiting so long for it. And then we finally got there, and yeah. We'll get into my thoughts on the actual race itself a little later on, but it was a nice weekend. I feel like I'm the only person in the entire world who had to work today, but that's all right.
Yeah, I took today off because you never know with rain and so forth. 2 years ago, Daytona 500 finished at like 2 a.m, so I figured take Monday off. It's President's Day. Enjoy the day, and I got some errands, ran, and picked up kitty litter and some toilet paper and all the fun stuff that we missed during our grocery shopping excursion on Saturday. And now I'm here with you guys. And we got some NASCAR news to discuss.
The Bump and Run NASCAR news.
So not a whole ton of news to discuss because I feel like everything kind of leading up to the Daytona 500. I mean, once Speed Week started, the news really didn't begin to collect, but there is about four stories. NASCAR apparently is considering a race in downtown New York City. I don't remember if we touched on this one last week, but so far we haven't even seen the road course or the street race in Chicago yet, and already NASCAR is looking towards the future, hoping it's a success, planning and almost predicting it's going to be a success, and then talking with other cities. What do you guys think about a street course race possible in New York City?
I think they took away a race from Pocono, and that's bullshit.
Yeah.
And I think if they try to go back to the Northeast, you already had a race here that you took out there. You don't know how the Chicago one's going to go exactly as you stated, Whitey. You know all the troubles they went through with the city, the officials, the planning, all that bullshit that comes into play with it, where Chicago almost got scrapped because of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just, don't get me wrong, we're from the Northeast. I like it. We have our racetrack here. You know, I think there are other cities that would benefit a little bit more from NASCAR going there, you know, from the East Coast, all in the middle, out to the West Coast. You know, those people crave and are looking for something a little bit more. I know the market, obviously New York City, eyes on the TV, that's what they go for. But to me, you need to get the people out the racetrack now, you know, and I get it. I'm not a fan of it. I think we already have a racetrack here. How about you maybe create a road course out of Pocono infield?
You know,
that's that, like, I don't know. I think they're reaching now. It's let Chicago happen and see how it is first in my eyes. This is something that where I could see NASCAR getting way ahead of themselves, and it's actually going to hurt rather than help in the long run.
How about you, Matt? What's your thoughts on a New York City possible street race?
If they do race on the infield of Pocono and they do the Pocono road course, they're going to have to build that track around us, God damn it, because we're not going anywhere. What do I feel about the New York City road course? I have no idea. You know, we, like you guys both said, like, we don't know, like, Chicago could be a disaster. Now, we tend to be positive. We try to be positive on this podcast. So we'll stay positive and hope that Chicago is good, right? Because if it is, it's only good for the sport. We don't want to root for that to fail. But I'm cautious about it. I don't know yet. And I think that's okay, right? Like, we don't have to go and have a hot take on something that we really don't know, you know, what we're getting ourselves into yet. The logistics behind a New York City street race, to God, that's a pretty ballsy, lofty goal in my mind. Like Eric said, we've got Watkins Glen, we've got Pocono, we've got Dover, we've got New Hampshire, Loudoun. We've got our Northeast pretty covered up here. Why not go to like Seattle if you want to do, you know, if you want to tap into a new market, go out to the Northwest. You know, Seattle is an untapped market for the most part for NASCAR. Go do something out there. I just don't know how that would work, but I'll say this, you know, as long as ticket prices aren't crazy expensive, you know, we're 2 hours from New York City. I wouldn't mind going to check it out if it was something that were to happen.
Oh, it would definitely bring me in, you know, like we're here, like you said, I would go to it for sure because it would be, you know, considered another backyard race for us. But like Matt said too, like, I'm kind of thinking outside of us and looking at others, you know what I mean? Cause I know a lot of people, even in the NFL, they get upset about that. The same cities, the same, you know, California has three teams, Florida has three teams, and New York has three teams. And it's like, spread it out a little bit, you know? And that's where my mind goes when I think of that. And to like, do you guys think that they would just rotate that street course? So like, you have Chicago 1 year,
I would hope, and
that
so, gets scrapped. Yeah.
You have, yeah, because like if you just start, we've talked about this numerous times. We like the amount of road courses that they've had on the schedule. You can't go more, and you could take one or two out that didn't pan out or they didn't race well. So that product didn't work well. I don't mind replacing those and trying something new in those slots, but to add new ones to get rid of, we went down that road a numerous amount of times. But if they make it a rotation, I would definitely like to check it out.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to a New York street race, and kind of what you said, if it's just kind of, you know, rotating where the street race is, I would like to see that. See it move from Chicago to New York, maybe up to Boston, you know, like hit the major cities. I would just hate to lose Pocono for, let's face it, a gimmick race. You know, we have a purpose-built racetrack right here in the Northeast. It's an hour and a half away from New York City, like downtown New York City. So it's within reason to travel to. We're within...
Dude, you guys know, most of the people that we run into
are from New York.
Are from New York and New Jersey anyway. So we've already got that fan base cornered, and they travel, you know, less than I would probably say 70% of the people that do come to Pocono, you know, those New York City and New Jersey folks, the Poconos borders near New Jersey. So it's not that far from that market.
An hour drive for those guys, maybe even less.
Oh yeah. And to your point before, Matt, like, you know, as long as prices aren't too outrageous, I keep hearing some crazy prices for tickets for this Chicago street course. So I feel like most of the fans that are going to come to Pocono anyways, like, they're probably going to keep coming to Pocono because you're saving money to go to that race instead of paying, like, you know, exorbitant amounts to go down to downtown Manhattan and see a race, you know?
Isn't a friend of the show, Jay, going to Chicago? or he was thinking about it.
Yeah, he has tickets. He bought.
Did he mention how outlandish the prices were? Or were they fair? Like, I don't want to put his business out there, but
I don't necessarily know he bought race tickets for it. He already had the hotel lined up and booked for the day.
Gotcha. Okay. I was just curious because I heard the same thing, Whitey. I heard they're outrageously expensive.
Yeah.
But now is that due to, not to get into the weeds of down this section off of NASCAR, but what I said earlier, the logistics and the fighting with the city, I'm assuming the city knows how much money they're going to lose over that week with them being there, setting up, doing this, blocking this off, this business, this, you know, city block is going to lose however much. So that's probably part of the deal. And I would imagine that is going to is going to drive up those ticket prices so that the city, they make out. And I think that's what almost caused the deal to fall through in the beginning was, the city said NASCAR was kind of screwing them on the deal. What was that, Whitey? I know you kind of dug into it a little bit more than I did.
Yeah. So they're arguing over, how much the city was going to make, for the NASCAR race versus how much the city was going to make for Lollapalooza, because Lollapalooza also is like a week long event. They're still going along with Lollapalooza, but it brings in the crowds and they get so many millions of dollars versus NASCAR, which is also going to take up a whole entire week logistically just to set up and everything. And they're worried about those businesses being impacted negatively because of that setup time and just people being in that area, kind of blocking the flow of walking traffic and all that stuff. I'm not sure if they had like detailed numbers, but I know they were saying they were going to lose out. I'm sorry, on like maybe like a couple million dollars or something like that. But at the same time, they're still making more money that they wouldn't have made otherwise too. So it's just comparing it to Lollapalooza. They're not going to make out as well. So some of the city council members were kind of against it. And so far right now too, I don't want to get people too overhyped, but NASCAR's just considering they're in like early talks with the mayor of New York City and stuff. It's not like anything's confirmed or anything like that. So yeah, we'll see what happens with those two races going forward. I am excited for later on in the season to see how the Chicago Street Race fares, and I hope it is a wild success. We'll see how these cars' aero packages handle it too, though. That's my biggest fear, is we're gonna have a giant event with kind of lackluster racing. And you never want to see that. Next piece of news, though, to move things along, Dierks Bentley will be the pre-race performer at the All-Star Race. So if you didn't like what you got at the Clash, we're going back to country music and Dierks Bentley for the All-Star Race. I don't know if that part's going to be televised. I hope it is. I'm a big Dierks Bentley fan. I think he's one of the better country artists out now. He's a rocker. So what do you guys think about old Dierks joining the All-Star Race lineup?
I think it's getting us back into our wheelhouse a little bit more. It seems like, you know, You ruffle the feathers of some, you got to kind of give them a little lollipop to calm them down. You know what I mean? Here you go. Sit down. Here's what you asked for. And you know, be quiet. You know, that's the way I look at it. You have to go back and forth.
Yeah. I love Dierks too. I think we've all seen him a handful of times, and you know, he puts on a great concert, and like Whitey said, he's a rocker. And I think that's more in line with the NASCAR crowd. Don't get me wrong, I don't want to paint us into a corner, right? Like, I like when they do, you know, Ice Cube and whoever else, you know, I like extending that out, but to stay true to the roots, you have to stay true to the roots as well. And let's face it, like it or not, country music and NASCAR go hand in hand.
And we're going back to our roots racing at North Wilkesboro Speedway for the first time since 1994. So I feel like a country artist is very fitting for the All-Star Race. I forget who performed at the All-Star Race this past year. Before that was Sammy Hagar, though. I like that they have a little
rocked.
Bit of fun.
He was rocked. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. I remember.
That was great. Yeah.
I remember a lot of people being like pissed off at Sammy Hagar down at that Texas All-Star Race, but I thought he was awesome. And I love that he played to the green flag.
Yes. I thought that was awesome.
I wish they would do that for more races. Uh-huh. I think that's like not to call it a gimmick, but I thought it was a really cool gimmick to kind of draw eyes and, you know, because pretty much every race has kind of a pre-race concert, you know, why not have that guy play to the green, you know? Let's see, next piece of news though, and we only have two more stories. Daniel Suarez signed himself a contract extension on Thursday, So he's going to be with Trackhouse Racing for a couple more years.
So did Ross. I noticed it wasn't on the notes Ross extended too.
Yeah. I didn't realize Ross was up too. So both Trackhouse drivers extending their contracts. What do you guys think about that? I know we're all pretty high on both those guys. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's just another step towards giving your driver a clear head and a clear mind to focus on his skill and focus on going out there on a week-to-week basis and just, you know, performing at the level that I think Justin Marks knows that those two drivers are capable of performing at. And, you know, whenever you have that contract and you know there's nothing looming or you're going to be, you know, going to a different team or have to find sponsors, all you have to do is focus on racing and what's ahead of you. So I think nothing but good things are going to come from that 1-99.
Yeah, both were playoff drivers last year. Ross was a championship four favorite, finished second in the standings. Both well deserving, and I think they're not going anywhere. I think they're only going to get better, both of them. Their prime is way ahead of them still. So, I love that move by Trackhouse for both of them.
All right, and now it's time for us to eat crow from last week. If you listen to the Daytona 500 preview show, we did a little segment where we green flagged, checker flagged, black flagged, yellow flagged drivers going into the season. And did I black flag Alex Bowman? I know for sure it was at least a yellow. Alex Bowman.
I yellowed him. We were all wrong.
Yeah, we were all wrong. Alex Bowman and Ally both extending their contracts with Hendrick. My season prediction was that if Alex Bowman didn't perform this season, it was a contract year that he would be let go from Hendrick Motorsports before the season even started. He got picked back up. So big congratulations to Alex Bowman. Again, I had nothing against him last week. I'm an Alex Bowman fan.
Like 48 hours after we recorded last week's episode and said we think he's out at Hendrick after this year, he gets re-signed. So I said it last week. I'll say it again this week. I hope I'm wrong. You know, I hope Alex goes out there and kicks ass this year.
Yeah, so do I. And you know what? I don't even think it was 48 hours. I think it was legitimately the day we dropped the episode. They released that news. Hold on. Justin Pierce tweeted at us that day. I want to see... see which one it was.
Friend of the show, Justin Pierce, who's a huge Alex Bowman fan.
Big Alex Bowman fan.
Let us know immediately that we were wrong.
Yeah, it was 8 in the morning on the 15th, which was the Wednesday after we released the episode. So we did it Monday night. So less than 48 hours. Crow eating the crow. I hope Alex Bowman does really well this year. Great start to the year so far. Got himself his fifth or sixth Daytona 500 starting row start, and by getting the pole once again and then finishing the top five, got a fifth place finish at Daytona, which I think is one of his better speedway finishes, if I'm not mistaken. But that's all I have for the NASCAR news, unless you guys saw anything in the meantime.
No, it was like you said, it was all the news was focused on the Great American Race this weekend, and rightfully so.
Absolutely. There's always sponsorship news that we don't really touch on. But if you want all the latest sponsorship news, head on over to jski.com. That's usually where we get our news from anyways. Let's jump into the NASCAR weekend. We had Trucks, Xfinity, ARCA, and Cup on Track. Usually we don't cover ARCA, but there was an amazing win at the end there. God damn it. I wish I wrote down the ARCA driver's name.
Keep going. I'll get it for you.
Yeah. But we had Zane Smith win in the trucks for the second year in a row. This time it was due to a rain shortened race in the truck series. Austin Hill won for the second year in a row after Sam Mayer and Justin Allgaier made contact after the white flag with Mayer wrecking. That was a controversial finish, and we got into it between us in the group chat. And then the Cup race, also kind of a controversial finish. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. led one time for 10 laps, and he took the yellow flag for the win, running out of gas at the line. Couldn't even do a burnout. What did you guys think about the racing weekend? Did you guys get to check out the truck race? I watched a little bit here and there, and then I got lost in that rain delay. How about you guys?
Real quick, it was Greg Van Alst who won that ARCA race. 41 years old, too, so pretty cool. Yep. He had a cool story. Go look that up. It was neat that he won that race.
Yeah, he has a really cool story. He first started racing ARCA back in, I think, 2001 or so. Had to give it up for a while. Came back after a couple years. Basically just put together a car that's their only super speedway car they had for the ARCA season. And they ended up winning. He did super emotional breakdown. If you want to go check out that interview, it was really cool. And I have to mention too, with ARCA, Frankie Muniz was the big story in the offseason. Frankie Muniz, of course, the actor best known for Malcolm in the Middle. And we'll throw big Fat Liar in there too. His big movie. But he's running a full ARCA schedule. I thought about it. I can't wait until Pocono weekend. I'm making it my goal to run into Frankie Muniz and get a little voice clip going, "Hey, this is Frankie Muniz, and you're listening to the Bump and Run podcast." I think that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
But he got, I think, an 11th place finish. He ran pretty well. What do you guys think? Did you get to check out any of the ARCA race out there too?
I didn't get to watch the ARCA race. I did watch the Truck Series race. I might have jinxed the 500 because, well, I say this all the time when it comes to trucks. I had a couple people over the house to watch the race, and I'm, you know, drinking some homemade wine, and next thing you know, I go, you know what, I'll bet any money that this Truck Series race is better than the 500 on Sunday, because it was a great race. It was the only race that I saw other than the 500 Xfinity on Saturday. I had some prior obligations to help a buddy go pick up a safe at Cabela's about 2 hours out of town. So I was out doing that with him. So I missed all the Xfinity Series race. And I, of course, watched the highlights. But that Truck Series race was awesome. It was dicey. They were racy. And I really enjoyed watching that.
Dude, the way they dance around too, like it's like chaos out there. You see them, you know, going into the turns and both lines are doing one of these
just
moves.
Wiggling,
and it's like
yeah.
They're gonna bounce off each other and wreck at any given moment. And the truck race is so much fun. I got to watch the truck race. I watched the Xfinity race on my phone at a hockey game. And then that was fun. You know, like Whitey, like you said, you know, there was controversy at the end that we can get into if you want. I still think it's bullshit. I know we have a pick a lane segment that's geared towards this later on, so I don't want to dive too much into it, but it was a good race.
So my favorite thing about watching the trucks at Daytona on the backstretch, I feel like Matt said, like they kind of go in and out. It reminds me of like a strand of DNA, you know, the drawings of like a strand of DNA where it gets like wider and then skinnier and everything. That's what it's like. And then you have guys like dodging in and out. It reminds me of an iRace, to be honest with you. I think that just stems from the lack of experience where guys are constantly like switching lanes, being super aggressive and stuff. But it was a really great race. It was unfortunate that it ended under rain. I remember when they went to the red flag and then they came back from yellow. Like I was switching back and forth watching YouTube and coming back to rain coverage and everything. And then they were back on track. I'm like, oh shit, they're going yellow. And I text you boys. I'm like, never mind. They're calling the race. And Zane Smith won for the second year in a row. And then, like Matt said, some controversy at the end of the Xfinity Series race. Like Eric, I was trying to get my normal Sunday errands done on Saturday. So we went to the grocery store, all that stuff. We did a lot of running around Saturday. I was listening to the race on the radio as I could, and I got home with 10 to go to watch that absolutely thrilling finish.
Oh my God, it was so exciting. Like no matter how the race ended, that the last like probably 20 laps or so were like unbelievably tense. And like, that's my favorite part about super speedway racing is just the intensity that comes with that kind of racing. Cause at any moment, anything could happen and you have no idea who's going to win that race until the last 100 yards of a race. Most times, you know, I love super speedway racing.
I like too that it kind of came up to gas for a lot of guys, you know, like a lot of people were nervous about gas and those restarts. Of course, unfortunately, Josh Berry, he ran out of gas. The other guys, the radio chatter was insane. It's like, oh, we got like a second and a half more than them. It's like, how much gas is a second and a half? Like, I want to be able to do that math as like a crew chief. because those guys, they're all pencil paper type guys, you know.
They were talking about it like a second and a half could be as much as like 6, 7, 8 laps of fuel, but like you're not 100% sure because there's the draft effect. You don't know how much is being used then. You don't, you know, it's there's a lot that goes into it.
Oh, yeah. And Austin Hill was right on the verge, too, because he led a whole bunch of laps just like Josh Berry did. You never know how much extra fuel you're using. In the end, of course, Sam Mayer kind of, I don't know if it was a bad move or not. He went to the outside of his teammate, Justin Allgaier, trying to make that run happen. They got into each other. Sam Mayer flipping like crazy, like just a spectacular crash. And of course, the yellow flag came out. There was some controversy because it looked like Justin Allgaier was leading. But by the time that the booth hit that caution flag, Austin Hill had passed him by just a little bit. And then even who was in the 20 car for the Joe Gibbs 20 car? I forget who it was, but they were pushed below the yellow line. And for a second, it looked like they could have won the race, too. So kind of just a clusterfuck at the end, to be honest with you.
John Hunter Nemechek?
It was John Hunter Nemechek. Yeah. He ended up finishing second.
Yeah, he was getting pushed by the 19 car, I think.
Yeah, and they ended up saying he was forced below the double yellow line, so he got to keep his position, but just kind of a big mess. And like Matt alluded to, we'll talk about it a little bit in the pick and lane segment, because yellow flags at the end did factor in with both the Xfinity and the Cup race. But I mean, I thought it was a great finish, and I was happy to see that RCR 21 car in victory lane once again. Like last year, I don't know if you guys remember the story from last year, but I start screaming RCR, RCR, RCR over again because, Eric, I don't know if you want to tell that story from our trip to Daytona last year and having a little too many on Saturday at the bar.
Yeah, Whitey, we were in a different position last year for sure. We were in Daytona watching it at the bar, and you had absolutely no idea. And bombed out of your mind. Turn around and go, Whitey, I go, dude, Austin Hill, your boy, is about to win. You go, oh, shit, RCR.
RCR.
He went from not even caring, knowing the race was on the TV, and then to being just a straight up just RCR fanatic within a split second. Great, great memory from Daytona for sure.
Yeah, so I redid that memory. I Snapchatted me on the couch screaming RCR. I sent it to Matt, which I apologize. I know you were pretty salty over that end, but I thought it was a good throwback joke. I sent it to Jay, too, because Jay was there, so... but yeah, and then, of course, the Cup race, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. led once for 10 laps. We had 3 hours, 38 minutes, 53 seconds. It was the longest Daytona 500 in history in terms of miles. And I feel like last year was also the longest, so I think we broke last year's record. We had 52 or 8 cautions for 38 laps, 52 lead changes among 21 different drivers. Your top five: Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Joey Logano, Christopher Bell, Christopher Buescher, and Alex Bowman, rounding out the top five. Fellas, let's jump into the race grades.
It's our NASCAR weekend race grade.
All right, let's jump in with Matt off the bat. Do you want to give us your race grade?
Yeah, so I gave it a B+. The race was good. It wasn't great. You know, I can't just throw an A on the race just because it's the Daytona 500. That's not the way I roll. I want to be as fair as possible across the board, no matter what the race is.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought it was a very calm, you know, race for the most part. Super speedway races to me are always going to be good, you know, in the way of entertaining. But and yesterday was, you know, it was just calm. There wasn't, you know, there was probably what, 3 or 4 big events that happened that really came out of that race. No offense to Ricky Stenhouse Jr., but for me, that's just kind of a meh win. Yeah. You know, I understand, you know, one of the draws about the Daytona 500 and the pageantry behind it is that anybody can win. Anybody's career can be changed by winning it. But I prefer to have, you know, the biggest names in our sport win that race, but that's just not the way it happens sometimes. And I don't know. It was just okay. You know, I knew the first half of that race was going to be setting up for the second half of the race. It always does with the second half of the race. Usually it comes to life, and it just never really did. You know, the last, whatever, 10, 15 laps were pretty entertaining, but you had the pit cycle cycling through, and you had, you know, one pack catching up to the other and different strategies. And I don't know. It just, to me, it fell flat on its face.
Yeah.
For the Daytona 500. Now, with Jeff Gluck's poll, was this a good race? Yes or no? Yeah. I don't think it warranted a no vote. You know, I it wasn't an awful race. It's just, I hold the Daytona 500 to such a high standard. And for me particularly, it didn't reach that. Unfortunately, it was still the Daytona 500. It was still a good race. Just not what I wanted out of it.
All right. How about you, Eric? What'd you think?
Yeah, I kind of am in the same boat as Matt here. I actually gave the race a C+.
Okay.
It, to me, you know, I'm in the same boat. I don't give a fuck. It's the Daytona 500, and like, it is what it is. I've been going there for fucking damn near almost 10 years, and that was in the bottom of my races that I've been there to see. I want to blame the car a little bit for that too. I think that this super speedway package for this new car still needs a ton of work.
Yeah.
But to me, everything leading up to it was great. Everything, you know, it had everything it needed to have the 500 be a great end to this, you know, race weekend and the race week and the start of the season. And like Matt said, I think it fell flat on its face because stage one, stage two, I know I told you guys earlier, I was at a dart league party, and I'm grateful that I was at a dart league party.
Yeah.
Because stages one and two, nothing happened.
No,
I was able to bullshit with my friends, throw a couple games of darts, look over at the TV, like, okay, still nothing's going on. And like, nothing happened until about 40 laps to go in stage three. Like, you could have literally scrapped and thrown one and two right into the trash and just watch stage three and been like, okay, this is all I need. And, you know, was it entertaining? Like Matt said, of course, super speeder racing is going to be entertaining, but I felt like that was one of the least entertaining, racing on track. Like,
yeah,
they, towards the end too, like Matt said, I hated the fact that they weren't side by side and wheeling and dealing for the last 40 laps like that. The strategy was too late. They were single file. There were packs of six cars and eight cars and 10 cars in that last stage that had to get together and come back and try to form a line. And they got kind of spread out. And you're like, oh my God, is this going to end with just like the six cars in front, like battling for this? And like, it just kind of, everything was broken up at the end and misorganized. And the cars were hard to handle, which I kind of like that at Daytona. You're not just pinned down. You have to have some handling in your car.
Yeah.
But it was just way too easy to get someone, you know, loose. And you can't, when like Denny always said, you could feel that energy and you bust out of the pack, go to the back and hook on to the end. You can't do that in this car. So if you're not around somebody, if you're uncomfortable, you can't kind of go to the back. You'll lose the draft too easy in this car. I heard one thing that Denny said too, where manufacturers didn't even matter. He said it didn't matter who you were around. Manufacturers didn't mean shit. And I think that changed the aspect of the race, because I thought that's what they were doing in the first stage going into the second, like waiting for that caution to set up your pit cycles with your manufacturers. And, you know, like that was almost non-existent, which was different for a Daytona 500 and a super speedway where the Toyotas were going with the Fords one time. Like it was who you trusted more than a manufacturer, I felt like, because the cars were so ill handling. So, you know, you were surrounded by people you trusted to push you. And that was the ultimate difference. And, you know, coming to the end, it split apart, split up so much. It just, it didn't have that, you know, that Xfinity end where it's like the intensity's building, you know, and those lap after lap, like, yeah, you could feel the energy building, and there was no energy built up. There was no energy building. It was the energy was just all over the racetrack in the 500. And it just, it did not do it for me. And this was what I'm talking about when a few years ago I said, super speedway racing is really not like, it doesn't fancy me. Like it lost me. And this is what I'm talking about when we have a race like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it. man, I agree with you guys on so many things. And at the same time, I had to give it an A. I had to. It's the Daytona 500. Unlike you guys, I put the pageantry and all that stuff into it. And I thought it was a good race. And even the race itself, I thought was a really good race. I think maybe some of the coverage was just lacking where we didn't see it. Like, I almost wonder if me and you went like we've been going for years now and watched it live and we got to see all the stuff in the pack and all the things going on pit road, if it would have been that A race and if Fox just kind of dropped the ball. But yeah, I mean, I gave it an A. It's Daytona 500. Even the worst 500 still an A because it marks the beginning of the season. NASCAR is back. Maybe even too, just all the excitement can never be kind of met, because even great Daytona 500s, like, if it's not your guy winning either, you know, there's still a lot of disappointment too in that, you know, like, I don't know. I thought it was great.
I think whether this was the Daytona 500 or the go-kart 350 down in Berwick, it doesn't matter. It's the first race. You're going to be excited for it. If that's your opening race. You know what I mean? You take any race and throw it in there besides the 500, you're going to be excited because it's the start of the season. It just so happens that we as a sport put the 500 in the front. And I don't know. It was it to me, you could have thrown any race in there and I could get excited for it for the start of the season.
I love super speedway racing so much. I mean, I've said it multiple times on this show, is like, I hold super speedway racing so much higher than every other form of racing, even though it's not really the most natural form of racing we have. Just from an entertainment aspect, it's just like, man, I was born and raised an Earnhardt fan, a Dale Jr. fan. So like, that is like my, I
you look forward to those racing. Tracks.
So for me, even the worst super speedway races are still better than your average intermediate race for the most part. And that's what I thought yesterday was, you know, if it was any other style track, you know, yeah, probably would have been a C-, but because it was the Daytona 500, it was super speedway racing, I probably did bump it up a little bit more than where it would have been else. Other than that, but yeah, I mean, I'm still looking forward to Talladega. I can't wait for Atlanta. I thought Atlanta put on some really fun races with the super speedway package last year. So we'll see.
I'm just glad, you know, like, I'm glad the 22 didn't win. That was a win for me. Anyone but the 22. Yep. And so, I was just like, that's the way I summed it up. Like at the end of that race, I think I was just like, like Matt said, like, you know, the energy that you expel and you're there and you're trying, like, I'm doing my part too at the bar to be as excited as I can, to get everyone around me excited. And, you know, we did a 500 pool where, you know, we randomly picked numbers for who's your qualifying driver. So people were invested. They had a driver and, you know, there was energy in the bar. But once that hate car didn't win, dude, like, once that happened, that took the wind right out of my sails. I thought we were going to see that hate car in victory lane.
Me too.
And once that didn't happen, I could have turned the TV off right then and there and would have just, and that's what my brain did. My brain kind of just shut off once that hate car didn't win in that last moment there. That's when we were racing. That was a race to the end there. And it just kind of, to me, man, that took the wind out of my sails, but I was glad that the 22 didn't win at the end. So overall, am I mad at the ending? No, I would have been if there was a different number in victory lane.
I think, Whitey, go ahead. You were kind of queued up there. Go ahead.
Well, you guys, you took the words completely out of my mouth. That's exactly where I was going, where I went to bed kind of upset about this whole entire race. Didn't like the winner. Didn't like the whole entire storyline. And then I woke up thinking about it. I'm like, but the intensity did build up in that third stage. You know, it was building. Kyle Busch got to the lead. Like, I was excited when Kyle Busch took the lead. I was excited for that eight car. Like, I wanted to see that win. I think I'm a true Kyle Busch fan at this point, you know, moving over.
I think I am too.
Yeah.
I was legit. Like, so when the RCR boys were hunting down the RFK boys, like, that part of the race,
that was exciting.
That was awesome. That was legit.
That was peak. That was peak of the race, for sure.
And we didn't get to, we got robbed of seeing those two teams battle it out for the finish because there was a wreck. If that played out the way it did, I'm telling you it's an A-plus race right now
because exactly.
That was developing into an outstanding finish. And then it didn't happen. There was actually a point where you guys would like this. You guys have watched millions of races with me. You know how I get at the end of these races. There was a point where the baby's starting to fall asleep in Steph's arms. I actually get up out of the couch and Steph looks at me and she goes, "Hey, whatever's about to happen, don't yell."
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. It's true though. I was in the exact same spot where I got up off the couch and I was watching and I was getting pumped and the dog was freaking out because I'm freaking out and everything. And
we almost had it.
And we almost had it. It was so close. I had money on the line with Kyle Busch. I wanted to see that A car do well. You know, obviously I watched those crew guys work on that car for years. Now I'm invested in the RCR number 8. I wanted Kyle Busch to win. I picked him to win on the podcast. I had money on him, all this stuff. And it's happening. And we're in this moment. And I'm glad you brought up that battle with RFK because those RFK cars were looking fucking great. Like the Fords were fast all day long. And that was the race. And then, of course, Daniel Suarez spun out. And I was freaking out. I'm like, why are you calling a caution? It was a single car spin. He's on the entrance to pit road. It's safe to proceed.
They didn't call one for the 15 car, and it was the same thing in my eyes.
Exactly.
The 15 car in the beginning is the same thing.
We got robbed of an amazing finish.
And that's why, that's like at the end of my race grade, like I kind of had that where it's like, that should have been the storyline we're talking about today. Yeah. That should have been the ending that we're all excited. And we should have been itching to get to this podcast and talk about, oh my God, Austin Dillon. Like I'm thinking in my head, is he going to push Kyle to the win or is he going to screw him and hang him out to dry for himself? Like, what's that storyline going to be? Like, is he going to push Kyle to the win? That's what I was wondering that whole time. And that is why I think like we got robbed of what was supposed to be the end of the 2023 Daytona 500.
That's at the heart of my unhappiness with the winner. Again, I like Ricky. I don't care about Ricky one way or another. You know, I have no ill feelings against him. We're robbed from an amazing NASCAR moment.
Like, we know that would have been a better start to the season. That would have been a better trajectory into next week. It would have been a better storyline for the sport. Kyle Busch, bigger name. I just think that everybody wanted that for some reason. You have the storyline of him, you know, joking, 18 coming back, switching cars. Like, and now look at Kyle Busch, the whole resurrection of him. Like, this was the start of another prime documentary on Kyle Busch.
You know
what I mean? Like it was there. The writing was on the wall and like everyone talks, oh, it's scripted and this and the NFL, all this going around in the world. Dude, no, because if it was scripted,
it would have happened. It would have happened like that.
The silver lining, the one good thing that this podcast does is find the silver lining in things. The silver lining is that Kyle Busch winning the Daytona 500 storyline advances one more year, right? And every year, just like senior,
it builds up that anticipation.
If he doesn't get it, it just keeps building and building and building. And then if he does eventually get it, we're going to have one of those amazing NASCAR moments. So maybe in our future, we'll be able to talk about, my God, Kyle finally did it. He went and he shook every teammate's hand like Dale did and yada, yada, yada. You know, I think we're building up for another really cool moment in NASCAR history down the road.
And it could have happened like that. And I think if it did, we would all give it A pluses. But the reality is we had a caution and we saw some great restarts. We saw some great battling and some different strategy. You know, Austin Dillon started on the side of Kyle Busch instead of lining up behind each other.
Well, that debris caution too, that threw everyone's cycle off as far as coming down and refueling. I think that is when the refueling issues came. And Denny hinted that. He's like, there was a caution. He goes, our track position was too good to go down and refuel. So we had to keep track position. Well, everyone else refueled. And then we all saw what happened at the end. So it's like, man, you're right, Whitey. All it takes sometimes is that one rogue caution to really just throw a loop. And it was like, I think why I didn't like it and I gave it the C+2, the wrecks happened over something dumb. It wasn't even a cool move that caused
it. It wasn't even a ballsy thing.
It wasn't even, you know, oh, I'm going to try to do this. All the wrecks and the carnage that took out so many good cars happened so, they were just so stupid and mindless errors that happened. It wasn't, I think that irritated me too. There, the wrecks didn't happen because of an awesome move where I'm going to go to try to do this. It was just Tyler Reddick just couldn't get pushed by the four car.
Got a little loose and got tapped, you know? And then, but all right, so let's go back to reality. So Kyle Busch didn't win it. Yellow flag comes out. I thought Joey Logano won it. And then all of a sudden, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. wins it. And you add all those things. Yes, it feels disappointing in the moment, right? But then I woke up. I thought about it. I'm like, the race was still pretty good. It was still a Daytona race. We saw everything you want to see out of a Daytona race, except for that amazing
finish. That's got to count for something.
Please retract that and say stage three was good.
Stage three was good.
You cannot say that the race was good. Stage three was good.
Okay, stage three was good.
I'll accept that.
Well, here's the thing. I'm not going to judge stage one and stage two because we saw mostly commercials, so I don't know what the hell happened.
That's fair.
And that's what I'm saying.
That is fair, too. You know what? That's a good point because, Whitey, we're used to seeing it in the grandstands and watching that energy from our point of view, being able to see it. We are our own broadcast from the top level of that Daytona grandstand. So this is kind of a new thing for us. And you know what? You have a point because normally up to this point in the Daytona 500 podcast that we've done, I think we were pumped about it. We were excited.
Oh, yeah.
We gave it A's. And then now here we're not there for once. And look at our point of view of it. And this is a tall tale sign. This is a perfect example of how much Fox in that broadcast really destroys a race.
All right. So I wake up this morning. I start thinking about it. I'm like, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is a Daytona 500 champion.
Yep.
I feel like he's a pretty deserving Daytona 500 champion. How many times have we talked about Ricky Stenhouse Jr. being a great super speedway racer? Now, the finishes aren't there because, again, Ricky gets caught up into some shit or he gets into some shit. Last year, we were freaking out in the grandstands that Ricky Stenhouse Jr. was leading the race because we thought he could finally get it done. This year, he finally gets it done. He led 10 laps. It's not like he didn't lead laps, you know? And you got to think big picture storyline. I think it adds to it. You have the first single car team to win a Daytona 500 in a decade since the Wood Brothers did. And then you have, you know, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. He's a two-time Xfinity champion, went on this giant losing streak for the longest time. He's won at Talladega. He's won at Daytona in the summertime. Like, we know he's a great super speedway racer. And he put himself into position to be there at the end. You know, it wasn't the Kyle Busch win we wanted to see, but I still think it was a pretty damn good win, you know?
I don't think anyone's upset that the 47 car won. Yeah. I really don't think that anyone's upset that the 47 car won that.
It's just not the win I prefer.
I think he got a lot of respect. You saw it. I mean, at least I saw it on my Twitter feed from the whole dirt world. They had a good, you know, party and celebration over their boy, you know, coming out of the dirt series and getting it done at Daytona. And you know, Larson and all those guys, you saw how happy they were for him at the end. So he has friends in that garage that were happy for him and ton of fans that were probably happy for him. It just wasn't anything but the 22. Yeah, so I'm happy.
Exactly. And Joey Logano didn't win at the end of the race. I'm like, yeah, that was a C race. But the more I thought about it today, the more I listened to NASCAR radio, the more I thought about everything.
I think not being there really affected it.
And that was the other point, too. I don't think we can miss another Daytona 500.
Right.
Because the two Daytona 500s that we haven't seen in person together, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. won and Michael McDowell won. Probably the two least fan favorite wins. Last year was another Cinderella story with Austin Cindric, but at least it was a rookie in the two car. The two car won on Roger Penske's birthday. Like, that's still a pretty popular win, you know? And I think what didn't help too, for years on this podcast, I know for sure I have, and I know you guys too, we've been singing the praises of Ricky Stenhouse Jr., saying he's not as bad as everyone says he is, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. and all that stuff. And last week, again, we have crow to eat because last week we all officially gave up on Ricky Stenhouse Jr. And then he goes out and wins the Daytona 500. I just hope that they could take this money, funnel it back into the race team, and I want to see Ricky running in the top 15 every week. And then I'll be happy. Then I'll be happy with the whole entire results. But fellas, we got to move on to the checkers and wreckers.
Three wide for the lead. One lap to go.
It's this week's checkers and wreckers.
All right, since we started with Matt with the race grades, we'll start with Eric for the checkers and wreckers.
All right, my checkers, I talked about them a little bit last week in our pre-Daytona 500 show, and I'll tell you what, I was super impressed. I loved his reactions, his emotion, and everyone around him, the team, the family. You got to give a huge, huge round of applause to Travis Pastrana in that 6-7 car. He made it to the end. You know, he was in an opportunity where, you know, he's pushing his owner of the car. He was loud, Denny and Bubba. And, you know, his car wasn't good enough to keep there and push them. And he admitted that, but he came home and finished 11th. He led a lap in the Daytona 500. And it was because it was hilarious. He's like, yeah, I led a lap in the 500 because I forgot to pit and I went a lap down and it ruined my whole race. But hell, he goes, I got back up there a couple cautions later. I'm on the lead lap again and I come home 11. So like he was like, when I saw Travis Pastrana talking about that, I legitimately got the chills because that was a kid. Pastrana was acting like a kid with his excitement and how you saw like that is what the Daytona 500 does right there. That is what, you know, the whole big picture. Oh, what's about Daytona? That right there. What his emotions were, that is how big the Daytona 500 is. And I'm just glad to see that he finished the race, got to do it, and you know, see his excitement and in that 67 car. I just thought he, for never being in a car before, learning in the parking lot how to shift those gears, I had to give my checkers for Travis Pastrana.
Yeah, hell yeah. He, like we said, leading into last week, you know, him just being there is huge, you know, for motorsports fans, not just for NASCAR fans, for motorsports fans. And I'm happy to see he made it all the way through and that excitement that he brings to it. You got to love it. Denny said on his podcast that the 2311 doesn't have any current future plans for him, but would love to work with him again in the future. So you never know when he'll get brought back in. That was a one-time deal for him. But personalities like that are what NASCAR needs.
Right.
They did ask him in the post race on MRN if he would return. He goes, no, it's like a one-time deal. I don't want to race any other races. I just want to do that one. So maybe we won't see him again. I would love to see him again, though. I thought he did. He held his own. He had a great run. I mean, like you said, finished 11th place. It sucks that he got into the 5 car and caused one of those cautions at the end there. I don't know if you guys noticed that one, but the 5 car got loose and shuffled into the middle, and Pastrana was coming down as like the 5 car was kind of coming. He just clipped him and junked half the field. But I feel like besides that, he ran a pretty fucking clean race for a guy that never ran a cup race before, especially in an next gen car that he's never seen anything like that. You know, how about your wreckers though? What was your wreckers?
I just gave it to the next gen car for this super speedway. I think, you know, it was a lot to do with the car in what we saw out there as far as racing. You know, it's not there yet. I think we saw what it could be, what it's capable of doing, but it's just not there yet. Just like the short tracks. And that's what's making me nervous is they had a year to kind of get this together, get this super speedway running. And I'm going to say it again. I think lack of practice is just the most idiotic thing that the sport is doing right now. And I think if you let these guys dial these cars in a little bit better, they might have been a little bit more racy and not as out of shape. And if you let them, you know, feel what it's like to get bumped and pushed for a lap or two laps by 6 cars instead of just 3, like you could sort that kind of stuff out. But yeah, this next gen car, they still need to do a lot of work, and it's making me nervous for the short tracks that they're still going to, we're going to see the same thing there as well. You know, we're not there yet, but it's just to me, I don't know. It made me a little bit nervous, and I kind of have to put the blame on the next gen car here. Just not there yet.
Yeah, I know all the manufacturers kind of made tweaks to their bodies this year too. I think we touched on this a little bit last week, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I know if you listen to Denny Hamlin's podcast, he did a great job breaking it down last week on why the Toyotas were worse than the Chevys and the Fords last year. And it's because they originally designed the car without those windshield scoops and the rear glass scoop, like cut lines and everything. And when they did that, it really threw off the aerodynamics of the body of the Toyota. They came back and they fixed all that stuff. It makes me wonder if that created some handling issues too, because if you listen to Dale Jr.'s podcast, he was talking about how, you know, you have to be careful when you're engineering a car because you might fix one thing and make something else completely worse. You know, there's a lot of, you know, give and take. It's kind of like an instrument, you know, it's gotta be perfectly balanced. One little adjustment and you're not getting that, you know? And I think that was the issue. I was listening to Larry Mack talk about it today with Tyler Reddick. He was talking about Tyler Reddick's car where inside the draft, he was fine. He was doing really well. He could take those pushes and stuff. And then once he got to the front, he couldn't take those pushes as well. Of course, we saw that Kevin Harvick incident, but he said like you could see the car is getting squirrely on the back end on the back stretch because, you know, when they're coming through the turns, the banking kind of sucks the car down and then you come and you kind of flatten out where it's only 3 degrees banking. And now all that air that was putting a load on your car, now it's not. And you kind of get loose and you can't take those pushes as much as you could. And I feel like we saw a lot of guys kind of get out of shape taking pushes on the backstretch. And we definitely saw it last year, too, with this next-gen car. And it just makes me wonder if they do need to tweak the Speedway package to compensate for something along the way. But then you hope that they don't break something else in the long run, too. But I feel like you're right. Something has to be done with the next-gen car, whether it's aero-wise or what. Because I'm hoping the short track package is better this year.
God, I hope so, man. Yeah. I hope so.
I don't want to be negative about it, but yeah. I have to say what came up when I thought about it. And that's one thing that I did. I'm like, okay, year two, next gen car, super speedway. Let's see what we get. And I didn't see any improvements. I think the race was, you know, it lacked because of that. So, my head just went to the two places that we went last year that struggled with this new car. And, you know, we're there again. We're with the super speedway. So, you know, put two and two together. I think the short track is going to suffer too, because they really didn't do much more changes to the car.
No. And you know what? We were talking about this last year with super speedway racing. I'm a big fan of the side draft, and it seems like the side draft does nothing in these cars. And that's what would really shuffle guys out of line and everything. So I don't know if there's a way to get that side draft working again. I feel like that's what is needed, because then you could kind of get a guy out of shape. He'll like kind of lift and get sucked into the sucker hole and go down the middle. And then you see a lot of shuffling that we really didn't see on Sunday. So it's unfortunate.
I mean, to be honest, Denny was saying how like you can't pull out because, you know, you go to the top, like everyone would go to the top and then you go back, you know, you ride the wall and then get back in line, go to the wall, get back in line.
Yeah.
When you felt like there was danger. Well, he says you can't really do that because when you get out of line, you go up there, the cars go below you, and you're kind of, even when you get to that last car and you get in line, you're done for. Yeah. I noticed yesterday that AJ Allmendinger, he was a madman out there, and I noticed him not losing positions and staying in the draft when he went into the sucker hole. I think going into the middle is your best bet nowadays in this next gen car, because when you're in the middle, everyone's afraid to be close to you. Yeah. They split out. They almost slow themselves down by being afraid of you in the middle. And when you get back to that tail car, you're actually able to keep up because they're not going as quick.
Maybe you need to be a wild card on that track. Just ride super aggressive.
He was in the middle. He was in that sucker hole, like all in that third stage. I felt like he was just trying.
Lived there.
Yep. He was trying.
Yeah. And he was there at the end kind of too. I know he did go a lap down at some point. I forget exactly what happened, but I remember, I think it was Clint Bowyer.
Sixth though. Like,
yeah.
Right.
At some point in either stage one or stage two, he did go a lap down. And, I think it was Clint or Tony. They're like, man, what the hell is he doing? Like, AJ Allmendinger is a fucking menace out there or something along those lines.
Yeah, he was a madman at one point there. I remember that little snippet of the race too.
All right, Matt. How about you? What's your checkers and wreckers?
My checkers is going to go to Brad Daugherty, man. That guy, you want to talk about, you know, good story. We actually get a good story out of Stenhouse winning, and it's Brad Daugherty. He's the co-owner of JTG Daugherty. The guy's been in the sport since like 1997, I think, in some sort of capacity, whether it was owning a truck team or.
I think he started with a truck team. And then not to cut you off, but you got to give credit to JTG in that Jody and Tad Geschechter. They've been in the sport since the mid 90s too, you know, and it was a different team name back then, but yeah, they've been at it a long time trying to get this thing done. So
absolutely. Absolutely. And then, you know, but you know, I don't know, you know, Jody and Tad, you know, all too well, but Brad, of course, you know, he's with NBC. He's an ex NBA player. He's, you know, kind of the face of that ownership group there. And he's been waiting a long time to be a Daytona 500 champ. And now he finally is. And, you know, I just like seeing good things happen to good people. And Brad Daugherty is definitely a good dude from all accounts. So I was really pumped up for him.
Yeah, I became a big Brad Daugherty fan listening to SiriusXM at night. He would do a weekly show with, I think it was Brad Gilley. And just some of the insight as a team owner that he would give was really just great information. Super likable guy, like you said. Loves the sport, always has. And now he could say he has one over on his counterpart, Michael Jordan. Both Tar Heels, right? Yeah. Brad was a Tar Heel.
Yep.
And now he's got a Daytona 500 championship, and MJ can't say that just yet. We'll see what happens in the future. But yeah, I kept looking for Brad too in the post race, hoping to see him like get an interview or something. I'm like, man, where's Brad Daugherty? Apparently he recently had eye surgery, and as it switched over tonight, the lights were hurting his eyes. He had to leave early, so he didn't even get to celebrate in victory lane and stuff.
Oh,
so
I didn't hear that part of it. Yeah. That stinks.
Yeah. He had to go back to his hotel. So super unfortunate there, but great team owner, great broadcaster. Looking forward to seeing him back on the NBC pit box when NBC takes over. We got what, like
only about 20 more races.
So we'll get to the good broadcasters soon. How about your wreckers? What's your wreckers for the weekend?
My wreckers, goes to Harvick and goes to Reddick for the boneheaded wreck that took out EJ, Reddick, and Chase. Yeah. It was the bump and run that took out the bump and run crew.
Yeah, it really did. And, oh my God.
And Whitey, you know, don't take this personally. Shrey, don't take this personally. Yeah. A resident Harvick fan. I honest to God, I have respect that they're your drivers. But that was so stupid. You know, Reddick's car was not easy to handle up there. He knew it. Harvick was pushing for no good reason. I've always said that Harvick's one of the most aggressive drivers that just happens to get away with it because he's a series champion. And I mean, am I biased because I have an open dislike for Kevin Harvick? Yes, I am. Am I biased because it took out my driver, took away a chance for him to win a Daytona 500? Yes, I am. But the aggressiveness at the end of stage two, I just feel wasn't necessary. And it took out a couple good cars. EJ could have had a car that could have won that race yesterday. That got taken away from us. It was just boneheaded. So that's my wreckers. Again, don't take it personally. It's just, you know, my fandom coming out. You guys know I wear my emotions on my sleeve sometimes. And, you know, this is just one of those instances.
I'll tell you what. I wondered in that instance, because like once Whitey said it about Reddick, you know, his car in the pack was fine. But up front, I noticed that with a couple cars. When they were up front, they would get out of shape. They couldn't take that push in front. Whitey, did you hear any kind of communication from the spotters? Like was the 45 spotter telling the four, hey, you can't push here, like, hey, this is like, we are not good here, like, wait for the next front stretch or back stretch, push me, try to get me into the corner, I'll get ahead and let you go, like, I'll come down, you go, let me come behind you. They should have worked. I think the spotters And now this is what I hear from the broadcast booth too. The spotters are driving these cars more than the drivers are.
Yeah. So,
and, you know, they see the energy, they feel the energy, they know they're the ones driving the cars. And to me, I wouldn't put Jesus, as much on man. Harvick and Reddick as you would putting it on the spotters up on top of those grandstands.
So,
my burp?
Yeah, that was a loud one, man.
It's the weekend coming out of me, man.
Yeah, a lot of carbonated beverages. Completely understand. I had some too. What should we call it? So, listening to Reddick's interview on SiriusXM today, he said there was just no time for the spotters to communicate and kind of let each other know, like, hey, my car's out of shape. It happened so fast, I guess. Like, it got loose within that lap and it was just done for, you know? So it's just one of those things, kind of sucks, but it kind of leads right into my checkers. Gotta give my checkers to Ryan Blaney and his crew. He was involved in that lap 117 accident caused by Tyler Reddick and Kevin Harvick. The team went to work almost immediately. They exhausted almost the entire damaged vehicle policy clock. They went two laps down to get the car back to as good as they could get it. That thing was beat to hell, and he battled back to get an eighth place finish, you know? And it just goes to show you that it's not all luck when it comes to these super speedways. There's a lot of luck in avoiding those accidents, but there's not a whole lot of luck in terms of making your way through the pack and being up front. Ryan Blaney's definitely one of those guys. He's always a factor at Daytona. If it's not an if he wins the Daytona 500, it's a when he wins the Daytona 500. Unfortunately, this year wasn't his year. We'll move on to 2024 and see what he could do. And my wreckers, I got to give it to 2311. Just a rough day for Reddick and Bubba alike. Bubba was running in the lead when he got tapped by Truex, got him all squirrely and smashed into the wall. He battled back for a 20th place finish, but he spent most of the day either a lap down or two laps down.
An incident that we didn't even see because Fox decided to tell us about it like three laps after the fact.
Yeah, I had no idea. I remember at the bar, everyone's like, oh, Bubba Wallace, what happened? I go, what do you mean? Nothing. I was, what do you mean? Some Bubba hit the wall. Bubba hit the wall. And then literally, like, it took forever for him to show what happened.
Once they came back from commercial, like, it was like, oh, yeah, and by the way, this is what happened. And it's like, what do you mean, by the way? That was in the lead, and Bubba's car is probably fucked from now on. What do you mean, by the way? Like, they said it as an afterthought. It's like, dude, come, do better. Hey, Fox.
Get it together. I will say I saw it happen. So I don't remember. Was it in a commercial break? Was it side by side? I remember seeing it happen and going, oh, Bubba just got fucked. And then he went back to the pack.
I'm pretty sure it happened during commercial and they came back and then showed it. I'm pretty sure. If not, you know, whatever, I'll eat crow on it. But
yeah, I'm not exactly sure because I remember seeing it happen and going, oh, shit, gotta adjust the lineup, the fantasy lineup and all that. But yeah, I don't know. He battled back for a 20th place finish. He led twice for five laps, which was nice. And then Reddick, of course, caused that big one on 117. Said his handling was great all day until he moved up to the front. And then said he just got really loose on the backstretch. And then just an unfortunate day, except for Travis Pastrana, who finished outside the top 10 in 11th place. So it kind of sucks when the part-time one-off guy runs better than the two full-time guys. But it is what it is. It's race number one. We'll see what happens once we get back to Daytona in the fall, heading into the playoffs. And yeah, that's all I have for my checkers and wreckers. Do you guys have any race notes to add in?
I just want to mention that Jimmy Johnson ran absolutely spectacular. I thought,
fantastic.
I got to throw it out this Mr. Seven time. You know, he really, really impressed me. And, you know, up until that wreck, you know, him and EJ were working amazing together. They were cutting through that field together. And I thought they had a real good thing going. And, you know, obviously that got cut short, but praise Jimmy Johnson, you know, for coming back and same boat as Travis Pastrana and running a great race. And it actually got me thinking, I forget who I was talking to there at the bar when I was watching it. If Jimmy Johnson won that race, do you think they would have him go full time? Do you think they would make a sponsorship to run the run a full season to try to, like, you win, you're
you're locked in, you know, if you declare points.
So, like, do you think that they would try to find a sponsorship and money for that car to run them?
I don't know. I heard a pre-race interview with Jimmy Johnson saying if it did happen, he wouldn't go full time, even if he did win. But I think it's easy to find that hard to believe.
Yeah, you're in the playoffs. You know what I mean?
I think it's easy to say that before you actually win the race and then get yourself into the playoffs.
He knows how hard it is to win that 500, how to win that race. So he's like, it's a long shot. But, like, once you get that checkered flag, I think Jimmy would be like, find me money and sponsorship. I'm running for a championship.
I'm ready. Let's go for number eight. Yeah.
So Judd, so I went and found the video of Bubba getting wrecked, and I went into the comments, and according to the comments, like, I remembered that right. Like, it was definitely coming out of commercial break because everyone is ripping. Oh, I would have seen it if you weren't on commercial.
Okay. All right. So yeah, that reminds me too. You remember last year I kept saying, like, oh, you got to watch the battle cam on the NASCAR app and then just put the MRN broadcast. They got rid of the battle cam. There's no battle cam anymore. I was so disappointed.
I was gonna say there's a certain quote unquote broadcaster that's gonna be in the booth the next couple of weeks. I would much rather prefer watching the battle cam over.
Yeah.
I guess I can't do that now.
I wanted to switch over during the 500 coverage because the commercials were just killing me, where I'm like, I can't get into this race because it keeps getting broken up with commercials. Like, I feel like that was most of the problem for me all day long. Not that the racing was bad, because, like, you know, super speedway, you're on the edge of your seat because anything can happen at any second. But speaking of the race, though, Fords, I thought they looked super strong all day long. RFK cars were running up front and leading a combination of 74 laps between Brad Keselowski and Chris Buescher. Keselowski with 42, Buescher with 32. And then all Stuart Haas Racing led some laps except for Chase Briscoe. What'd you guys think about Ryan Preece? I feel like he was up front a lot of the day in that 41 car. I actually thought it was Briscoe at first because it was that red Mahindra car. Yeah. And then Priest got stage
used to. Some of those guys it'll take some getting used to. Like I know during the duels, Mike Joy made the mistake of calling Jimmy Johnson off the pace when it was Bowman who was off the pace. So
Cliff Boyer said he goes there's Eric Jones in that 20 car. He called Christopher Bell Eric Jones.
Oh yeah, they do that all the time too.
That's bad because it's been a couple of years for
right. And I'm like, Clint, like, how hungover are you, dude? Like, come on.
And you want to, it even affects the crew guys, because listening to Reddick's radio, listen to the green flag stops and stuff, they'd be like, we're the second monster car coming in, second monster car coming by, because fucking Ty Gibbs had that monster car too.
Dude, when the Reddick and Harvick thing happened, I was cursing out Ty Gibbs at first because I thought it was Ty Gibbs that was involved. And
I thought Reddick was in the money line car, and I'm like, shit. I go, he's in the monster car. I go, that wasn't Ty Gibbs. I'm like, that was Reddick. I go, no.
Yeah.
And that's when I pulled my phone out to see what you guys are saying in the group, but I'm like, oh no.
And me, like, and Wayne went back and forth a couple of times this weekend. Listen, man, I love you so much. Just welcome to sports because this is what it is.
Listen, I get it. I understand. That's why I didn't argue too much back. Like,
I try not to be that guy. I really do. My emotions sometimes get me.
You know what killed me, though, was that Xfinity race where, I mean, the junior cars took themselves out. You know, you can't blame fucking what's Austin Hill for gassing it up as soon as he saw the wreck happen.
I was just mad at the call.
We'll get into that. And then whatchamacallit, Toyotas, they just didn't have the numbers they needed. See Bell, though, with his best super speedway finish, third place. What'd you guys think about old Christopher Bell in that 20 car?
You know, he said all he wants to do is finish. He's like, I can never finish these things. So he was really focused on, you know, I think not racing to the win, but him and his spotters being aware of when the wreck was going to happen. And he was on defensive mode, I felt like, all weekend. And you know, sometimes playing defense at the Daytona 500, it gets you to the end.
Yeah, I know he specifically dropped himself back to the end of the line at one point just to get out of all the chaos and everything. I think they actually slow pitted him to get him in the back. And then, let's see. I mean, not really much to report besides KB. Just, I feel like he had the best shot to win the 500 he's ever had. And
I gotta give a shout out to somebody that, you know, I kind of still think he has a shot. Young, it was a rookie last year, and you know, he started his season off pretty crazy last year in this race, but I always going to root for this car because I want to see them back in victory lane. And he had a hell of a fucking day, and he ran up front for a lot of that day. And at the end, he was inside that top five. And I thought he had a really good shot to win, was that 21 Wood Brothers car with Harrison Burton.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Hell yeah.
And that was your number at the deal you were doing yesterday, right? Like the 500 pole,
No, it was actually, it was Eddie Pollock, my one buddy and co-captain in the Dart League. He doesn't watch a lot of NASCAR, you know what I mean? But he's like, who's the 21? So like, you know, he, at the end of the race there, like we were all like hoping, you know, for his driver, his win. Cause I actually ended up with Chase Elliott and I was pumped. I'm like, hell yeah. I picked, you know, randomly I got Chase. So I'm like, oh, I'm solid here, you know? And once that happened, we were, you know, you root for people to win the money in the pool, whose driver was left, and his was Harrison Burton, and man, it was fun cheering some of those drivers on that you normally don't cheer for or look for at the end of races, but at those super speedways, those type of drivers, they get up to the front there.
Do you know what sucks too is like once you get past all the craziness that Daytona is, like we're in the season, like it has started, points have started to accumulate, and drivers like Erik Jones and Chase Elliott, they're behind the eight ball right now. And it's not going to get easier from here. So now they've got a hole to dig themselves out of. And I know it's one race and that can be taken care of pretty easily. But if you string a couple bad races together here and you leave the West Coast,
be a killer for your season.
You can like it can fall apart quickly. So teams like that have got to get ahead of it, go out to the West Coast and rebound quickly too.
It's gonna be a rough go for this podcast too, because all three of our drivers are sitting with 1 point right now. So it just sucks. Let's see. It doesn't suck as bad as Ty Dillon. Here on the Bump and Run podcast, everyone loves to talk about the winner on a Monday one, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. But we also like to talk about the guy who came in last place, and this week it was Ty Dillon, usually one of those guys that keeps his nose clean and ends up getting a top 10 at these super speedway races. He was running for Spire Motorsports in the 77, and he exited on lap 26 with an engine failure. Ty Dillon starting his career off with Spire off on the wrong foot. What did you guys think about old Ty Dillon? I usually expect more from him out of here. And
I agree with him. I trust him in a car. You know, he always ran good in that 13 Geico car when he was there. And, you know, I think he's a good plate racer. But what do you do when your engine fails? You know, there's nothing you could do with that situation.
Right.
Yeah. I wonder, too, they have a Hendrick deal with their engine. So not sure what happened there.
You always have to take those. You always have to take those partnerships with a grain of salt, though.
You do too. Yeah, like
they still have to put that engine and that whole car together, and one little thing will lead.
They don't have have the quality of engineers that Hendrick does. Yeah, they don't have the manpower that Hendrick does, the data that Hendrick does. Yeah, you have to take that with a grain of salt.
All right, let's jump into the pick a lane then. I only have one this week. The pick a lane segment, I give you guys a topic. We kind of argue it out, maybe. Both the Xfinity race and Cup race ended under yellow while waiting for the booth to call the winner. Do you like the rule of the time of caution, the old way of racing to the yellow, or do you have a new idea? A third option.
All right, let me go first here before Matt, you know, and Whitey start, you know, tickling each other here.
Yeah. tickle.
Right. I wrote down like my thoughts are this. I go, you know, NASCAR has a clear cut way of determining, you know, the winner at the time of a caution.
Yeah.
They timestamp the video with the time of the caution. They take that frame. They show that frame, caution, picture, frame, winner.
Yeah.
I get it. It's clear cut. That's the rule that's in there. I also know why they don't race to the yellow anymore. One word, safety. You know, I know Daytona's huge, but at other racetracks, you know, shorter, you never know. You race to the yellow. Where is this? What happened? Is the tire down? There's any debris down? It's a safety thing. I think that's why they kind of went away from that, not racing back to the start finish line there. I don't necessarily agree with it. I think I would always like to watch someone race to the finish, but what is the key word why we don't like a lot of the changes that happen? safety. And so I think this is his clear-cut way of doing it. Caution comes out, picture, frame rate. That is it. There's no gray area there, you know? And I don't necessarily like to see a race end that way, but that seems to be the most clear-cut way of doing it when you have that looming safety word above your head with every fucking thing. And I don't like that, but I think I have to agree with it and just leave it as it is.
My problem with that is there is a gray area, and it's the person who hits the safety button. There's going to be that human element that's involved with that always. You can freeze frame and everything, which is great. And I love that aspect of it where, like you said, you freeze frame it. Here's the timestamp. Here's when the caution came out. You mirror those together. Who's in front? There's your winner. I actually like that part of it. I don't like the part that it's some 78-year-old dude up there.
You don't know that.
Who's not ready to hit the caution right as soon as Sam Mayer turns and hits the wall and starts flipping over. There's that second or two of delay time, which can mean everything when the cars are going 185 miles an hour. So I think that there needs to be – you could put chips in footballs now where you can tell them exactly where the football is, at what time it is, with any technology that you need. I think that you can put a chip on these cars that do similar things, and on the tracks as well that do similar things. I mean, you have VR in soccer that shows you exactly where the ball is and where it crossed over. There's all this technology, and we still have some person up there hitting the caution button. I just that's the part that leaves a salty taste in my mouth. Now, for entertainment purposes, I would love to see them race back to the line because we've seen some awesome, amazing, classic finishes that way. I understand why we can't do it that way, Eric, because you said the safety is going to always have to be the number one thing. It just has to be. But I just think that we're getting closer to a perfect system, even though there's no such thing as perfect. We're just not there yet. And as long as there's that human element in it, we're still going to be, you know, a little off.
I think you need the human element. I don't think you could get a perfect system. And I think Autumn.
Why not?
Okay, the All-Star Race. What did everyone get mad about at the All-Star Race when they threw the caution for Ricky Stenhouse Jr. hitting the wall and Ryan Blaney was coming to the finish? They go, he was all alone. They shouldn't have thrown that caution. Why did they throw the caution? Ryan Blaney drops his window net because he thinks he wins it, but it's a late caution. And they're different.
It's a completely different scenario, though.
Is it? It's the exact same scenario. It's just opposite.
Because that driver was head and shoulders. Blaney was way out in front. Where this, you have 3, 4, 5 guys right in a pack.
Okay, what do you think? What
flipping head over head?
Okay.
Over other competition, you've got to have that caution come out immediately.
Okay, what happens when the alarm system triggers because someone got too hard of a hit, you know, or they hit the side of the wall and they kept going? It's still going to cause a fucking yellow caution because you've automated it. You don't have the human element of a person looking and seeing that's not a danger.
All right, fine. Good point. Automate it then. Make
I'm telling you not to automate it. So you want cautions for every single little thing? I feel like most fans would complain about that.
If that's what we're doing, if it's all about safety, let's make it uniform. No more judgment calls, right? Is that that's what we're calling for? No more judgment calls. Right?
I'm not. I want the judgment call. You're the one calling for no judgment calls. I think judgment
safety though.
But
if a caution's a caution, a caution is a caution.
But then you get tic tac little cautions for every little thing. You know,
so be it. Safety, brother.
Is it safety? It's unnecessary.
That's what we're going for, right? We're taking the excitement and the entertainment out of it,
and we might as well put laser beams on everything.
Let me get into the middle here. So basically, what Matt is upset about is
it taking too long for the caution to come out.
No, it's there's always going to be a little bit of a time from, okay, communications.
Yeah.
Caution. Okay, caution. Radio. Boom. There's going to be split-second decision, just like the spotters with the Reddick and Harvick thing. Yeah. It's happening at too fast of a speed. These cars are going 200 miles an hour. And when that's all going down, how many seconds from when Sam Mayer got moved to when he was flipping to when the caution came out, can you relay that message of a caution to the tower, to the flag, to the light? And that's where I agree.
That's why they go by the button. It's the tower.
You can't
get
it better as far as closer, but man, that's how much closer could you get? And then you get into the weeds, like Whitey is saying, I think, where now the races are 5 hours long. And this is why you don't want,
because you're creating more problems
in NFL and all those other sports, when the human element, it usually does ruin the sport, because now the timing of it, they're talking about it, they're debating about it. Do we want to see this? Do we want to see that? What is this? What is that? And I do agree, because Matt, the soccer thing is amazing for the onsides or offsides. Whether that foot was there, the ball was there, they are precise with it. But I think what we're missing and what you're forgetting is our sport and this and it's different.
It's different.
I think
yeah.
You have to. You can't have that same thought process as you do in other things, as you do with a super, especially a super speedway race. I just think
you know that a race was lost for Justin Allgaier. Because somebody was too slow to hit the button.
Was it though? He was involved in the accident. That's the thing. He created the accident. So now if it is automated and it happens almost instantly, then what happens when the guys in second are wrecking the leaders 10 feet before the checkered flag? So they ended under caution purposely. You know, when does that caution happen? At the point of contact or when the person's turned around? Because that could lead to two different winners there. The guy getting wrecked could still win because technically the caution came out before he was behind the other car. And then like Eric said too, the thing about soccer, yeah, it's cool because that's a hard rule. You put your foot over that line, you're offsides. There's no offsides in NASCAR. How many guys smash into the wall every race and keep on going? How many times do the commentators go, oh, he rubbed the sides off those Goodyear tires? Now you're going to start throwing cautions for every little incident on track when you probably don't need to, because now it's an automated system.
All I'm asking for is consistency, and we don't have that in our sport.
They do have consistency, though.
Whitey.
NASCAR is the least consistent sport in the world as far as rules go.
Because you're not going to make anyone happy, because they throw the caution too early for Ricky Stenhouse Jr. at the All-Star race, and everyone's pissed that they threw a caution for no reason.
Okay, listen,
you let that one go.
This is where we all have to agree to disagree, because I agree with both of you. I do. I agree with both of you. And it's like, you could go back and forth with that all day long, but the thing about a caution is when you automate it and you get it close to as perfect as you can, just like Whitey said with the car and how you design it, you might fix one thing, but you open Pandora's box in a whole nother world. That's what I think is where it's going. Yeah,
I agree. But I agree. I just
think that, like, they don't get it right every race. How many podcasts have we been on here where we said, why was this a caution and that not a caution?
Yeah. Right.
And that's where I agree with Matt. The automated system will clear that up. It will get rid of all of that. But where I agree with Whitey, and I think Whitey's right, is it will affect the race so much with so many little cautions, the product in a whole will be affected.
Which arguments aside, we can all agree we don't want, right? Yeah. Like, we're just arguing for the sake of arguing. And yes, there is a happy medium between what Whitey is saying and what I'm saying. Yeah. Neither of us are 100% right in this argument.
Right.
There is a medium somewhere, but like, where and how does that happen?
I think we're not the only sport trying to figure that out. I think that is why other sports are trying to go to VR and trying to, let's get the umpire out of there to do a camera.
I brought up laser beams because I remember having the same argument 12 years ago at Donut Connection with Luke's dad, watching Luke's dad and fucking Josh argue back and forth about laser beams up the quarterback's ass to get every single play in the NFL correct. But I'm a fan of the human element. I think you need that human element. It creates drama. It creates these types of situations. You know,
that's fine. Just don't complain when the human element bites you in the ass.
And I'm not. That's the thing. Like, it happens. Mm-hmm. It happens. It's one of those things. You go by, you try to get it as accurate as you can. And that's why they go by the still frame. They go by the button being pushed and not the flagman or the lights, because those things have time
that
it takes.
There's one thing that created that winner. Someone stayed full fucking pedal to the metal and somebody didn't.
Yeah.
That is who won the race. Nobody told Allgaier, whoever, Sam Ayers, to lift. No, Austin Hill kept his foot mashed to the fucking to the floor, and that's why he won. Yeah. Nothing other than that.
Yeah.
And he kept his foot in the pedal to stay ahead. When the wreck's going on, hey, he did a Jennifer Joe Cobb, go straight through the friggin' whole entire field. Keep that foot in. When you see a big wreck happening and you're in the front, I was a part of it. Like, Eric Jones got shuffled out of the way how many times in the last couple years in the last lap right next to the fucking wall? Like, what he's saying? By Blaney. You know, it's just like, it sucks. It sucks, but, you know, I think you're tired. Hey, keep that foot pedal to the metal. Yeah. That's what won. And, pedal to the metal.
And thankfully, the booth was super quick on Sunday, and they got that button in before Joey Logano took the lead, like I thought he did. And we're not celebrating or talking about a Joey Logano Daytona 500 win. We're talking about a Ricky Stenhouse Jr. win. So
thank
at least,
God.
At
we
least
can all end on that note. We all agree on that.
We can all take solace that Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is a Daytona 500 champion and Joey Logano is not a two-time Daytona 500 champion. But like I said before in our group chat, no one else is privy to this, but on to Fontana. We're heading, let's see.
Now the real racing begins.
Marty, you've got to come back with me.
Where?
The next NASCAR Cup race. It's the weekend preview.
And like a lot of people say, of course, the second race of the season is the true start to the season. We got the Daytona 500 out of the way, which could end up in an upset winner like we had yesterday. But we're heading to Fontana, California, where usually, and not always, but usually, the great teams are up front. The back markers stay in the back. And we have Xfinity cars on track Saturday, 5 p.m. on FS1 for the Production Alliance Group 300. And then we have Cup on track Sunday, 3:30 on Fox for the Pala Casino 400. And then we have practice and qualifying Saturday at 2 on FS1. And we are getting down to the end of the show here. So last week, I chose Kyle Busch as the winner. He got me 18 points. Matt chose Chase Elliott. He got you 1 point. And Eric picked his guy, Eric Jones. He also got you 1 point. So I'm going to go by the order of the finish. Chase Elliott came one spot behind Eric Jones. So Matt, you will choose this week first. Eric will choose second. I will choose last. And are we doing the betting preview?
Yeah, we can do that. I think last year we did the top 10 favorites. I don't think that's necessary, really. I think the top three favorites going forward is probably the best, you know, really show of who are the real favorites. So I'll just from this year going forward, I'll just do the top three favorites of each race. And these lines are brought to you by DraftKings.
All right, hold on.
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money talk.
It's the Bump and Run.
All right, Matt, give us that information we need to win us some fucking money, baby.
Every time I hear that song, I think about Shane O'Mac. What was it, SummerSlam, falling off the top
Titan
of the Jumbotron?
Oh, yeah.
Was it Ken Shamrock hitting him with the kendo stick?
I think it might have been him or like Steve Blackman or somebody. It was definitely one of those mixed martial
all
artists
the way,
guys.
Like 30 feet off into the tables.
Fucking amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Give us those numbers.
Right. So your top three favorites going from 3-2-1 out in Auto Club Speedway in California this weekend. Denny Hamlin comes in at +800. Chase Elliott comes in at +700. And then the California kid himself, Kyle Larson, is your favorite as of right now at +650 to win the race.
Man, they give Kyle Larson the odds to win every race. They gave him the odds to win the Daytona 500.
He won last year.
He's the previous race winner, so he's going to be up there no matter what.
I get it, but they also gave him the number one odds to win the Daytona 500, and he's an awful plate racer. Yeah. He hates plate racing. He'll tell you he hates plate racing. I think everyone just puts Larson up number one to begin with.
I agree, Whitey, but I think Hendrick has a lot to do with that at Super Speedways. Yeah. That's why they put him up front. They know he's going to have a car up front.
That's a good point that I didn't think about. One change from last year. Now, last year we limited ourselves at 5 picks for one driver per season. Do you want to do 3? Do you want to drop it down to 3? Because I feel like that never became much of a factor.
I'm down with that. Make it hard on us.
Yeah.
Make it hard on us. I like that a lot.
All right. So so we can only pick one of these guys a maximum of three times. So, Matt, since you go first, who are you picking to win at Auto Club Speedway?
Well, the three times thing really
changes.
You know what? I'm going to go with it, man. I'm going to go with a guy who we all wanted to see win the Daytona 500.
Son of a bitch.
The eight car was piloted by Tyler Reddick last year at Fontana. He had an average running position of eighth. He did finish 24th, but I'm assuming he got into some you know, problems there. He had 39 of the fastest laps in that eight car. Kyle Busch now pilots it. I'm taking Kyle Busch. He's gonna win his first RCR win in California.
I like it. I like the pick. I think Randall's going to put together another good car for the West Coast swing like he did last year. And as long as they figured out those tire gremlins from last year with the inflation issues and stuff.
Is that what happened? Was it a tire problem?
Yep. Tire went down.
Tire problems last year.
Yeah, tire went down. And then as he was coming back, Byron got loose underneath him and took them both out. So,
yeah.
I mean, that eight car, man, I wouldn't bet against it. How about you, Eric?
We almost saw him win it. We were glad he didn't win it. Matt took my first pick, so I'm going to go with that. The guy that we all wanted to see, Matt took. The guy we all didn't want to see, I'm taking this week. I think that Ford camp is going to be something to reckon with this year, all season long. And I think it starts this week with the 22 car.
Yeah. Good right. pick.
Man. Yeah, that is a good pick from Joey Logano. Man, oh, geez. I'm already waffling around. We only got 6 minutes left in the call. I have to do it. I have to. After a poor performance, Matt, Jesus Christ.
I'm sorry. Gassy, man.
You can't cover your mouth and muffle it a little bit.
We're talking about NASCAR. Yeah. You got a little burp.
I apologize for all the people listening with earbuds on a Monday or on a Tuesday morning. I got to go with Tyler Reddick. You know, he led the most laps here last year. Of course, it was for a different team. But again, those Toyotas were pretty strong at mile and a half and larger racetracks. I'm hoping they give him another good car like they gave Kurt for Kansas and Bubba for Kansas, too. So I'm going
Kurt
with
Busch
Tyler
really good
Reddick.
Here too.
He was.
Kurt Busch, he raced back three times in that race. Remember, he kept going back. He had a car.
Yeah, so hopefully they could do it again. And we will see for sure who it will be Sunday. Fox 330, we have the Paula Casino 400, and we will break it all down for you on Monday. Who will it be? Will it be Tyler Reddick? Will it be Joey Logano? Or will it be Kyle Busch getting his first win in that RCR number 8? We will find out Sunday, 3:30 on Fox, and we all break it all down for you right here on Monday night for the Bump and Run podcast. I'm Michael D. White. For Matt the Statman Riley, for Eric Daytona Ron, I'm Michael D. White saying have a good night. Screw that one all up. All out of order on that bad boy.
It's all good.
The Bump and Run.
There